Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Sean Walsh, recording on Wednesday afternoon, the 21st of February. Coming up, we have big news with details of a life cycle assessment of Irish grain that was carried out on farms across the country. We have the details of the final draft report from the Food Vision Tillage Group. We hear from Minister of State Martin Hayden, have the Tierlong Grain Award winners hear about a new product from Syngenta. We talk about the latest on the derogation from the tree crop rule, and as always, have the grain market and weather reports. Okay, first up, the big news this week. We've been waiting on it for a long time. So on Tuesday of this week, Tierlong held their annual Grain Quality Awards, and at those awards they published research along with Chagas. So themselves and Chagas worked together. Tierlong collected data along with Chagas from 48 of their grain suppliers, and that data then was put into a model, or was used to develop a model by Chagas, and those figures then were presented at the Grain Awards by Chagas's John Spink. So a really welcome development. So we've never had a proper carbon footprint for Irish grain based on data from Irish farms. And why is this important? Well, you know, it's important for sales of products to show that Irish grain has a low carbon footprint, but as well, you know, all the other countries in the world have a figure on this Global Feed Life Cycle Assessment Institute database. And the figures for Ireland were, you know, basically estimates based on other countries and made a bit smaller because we have high yields. So we need our own figures. So this data can't be used on that database, but Tierlong can use it to sell their products. And, you know, it's a step along the way on getting a model made and having a figure for the whole country. Look, a massive data set involved. So there's 48 growers, 14 crops, 11,500 acres. And between all of that, that gave the researchers 15,000 raw data points. And then when they teased those out, they actually had 46,000 data points to work with. So through the long and the short of it, the figure that Tierlong came up with was for Irish grain, for Irish barley, 231 kgs of CO2 per tonne of barley produced. Oats, 207 kgs, so that was the lowest. Wheat, 217 kgs. Oilseed rape, 388. Rye, 188 and 211. And it's important to point out all those figures are lower than the figures that are in the GFLI at the minute. So the GFLI for barley is 375 compared to Tierlong's figure of 231. That's for green grain. So at 25 kg was added on for drying, and that brought the figure for barley to 256. So then if you compare the GFLI, so the GFLI figure for Irish barley is 375 kgs, and then the Tierlan figure from 2022 is 256 kgs for dry grain. Oats then on the GFLI is 328, and then the dry oats 232 on the Tierlan figures. Wheat 338 compared to 242. Oilseed rape 832 compared to 413. Rye 683 compared to 213. And beans 392 compared to 236. So really good to have these figures. I suppose on the oilseed rape, people probably are thinking oilseed rape should be lower, but oilseed rape is a low yielding crop. You know, tonnage wise, energy wise, it's probably higher. So if we did that on an energy basis, that figure would probably be much lower. Tierlan also then looked up other countries on the GFLI, and Ireland came out the lowest basically for all of for most of those crops. So across oats, wheat, barley and oilseed rape, there's figures there on the tillage pages this week. This is all on a 2-page spread on the tillage pages, and it shows exactly how Ireland compares to other countries across the world using that GFLI database. So if you just look at the oats, so Ireland, like Tierlan, is down at that 232 figure. So then just look then at the figure for Ireland, 328. Then if you're growing oats in Australia, you're at 585. Canada, 478. Cyprus, 2,028 kgs per tonne. If you're growing oats, France, 441, Germany, 460. So Ireland is a way lower on that figure. Look, that is all across the tillage pages this week, and the reason why it's been done. There's also figures there on straw chopping and how, you know, many oat crops, there was a number of oat crops, the majority of them were chopped in that Tierlan study, and it showed where straw was being chopped. A lot of those oat crops were carbon neutral. But just to explain that, if we're using a footprint in Irish grain, we have to use that. The footprint has to have the emissions from the crop. We can't say, well, we emit this, but we sequester this, so we'll take it off. That's done separately. So if you emit something, you state that. So the barley produces X amount of emissions, but then if you sequester carbon through cover crops or strong corporation or whatever it is, you should be rewarded separately for that sequestration. So they're two different things. So it's all well and grand to say we're carbon neutral, but when we go out to sell things in the markets, we have to do it properly. So there is a difference. You know, we have to have clearly marked the emissions and then the sequestration separately. To explain this a little bit better, I spoke to John Spink. John is head of crops, environment and land use at Chagas, and John presented on the day, so we'll hear from John now. John, we spoke to you a few weeks ago about carbon numbers. You presented some at the tillage conference. They were from a research trial. You presented very different figures today, data collected from Tierlan growers, 48 growers across the country, and the results are good. So you now have, tell us, John, what you have from that data.
We've got, well, from the 2022 harvest anyway, we've got a good sample. It's about 3% of the total tillage area in Ireland.
Okay.
We've got a good sample of the Irish crop and what's actually happening on farm and what that means in terms of the carbon footprint of the crops.
Yeah, okay. So 11,500 hectares about was in the data, 48 farmers. And then we've shown now that we've compared these figures to countries around the world, and the figure that's there in the Global Feed Life Cycle Assessment Institute, that's a long word, for Ireland. So these figures are lower than all of those figures, basically.
They are, and that's because what we've used is we've used country-specific emissions factors. So when you're calculating these things, there are international default factors you can use. So, for example, for nitrogen fertilizer, the international default is to assume that 1% of that nitrogen goes off as emissions.
Okay.
When we've measured it in Irish tillage farms, it's more like 0.35%. So it's a third of what's assumed internationally.
Okay.
So when you actually use our own specific emissions factors and then you use our activity data, so what farmers are actually doing on farm, then you find that the figures are much lower. And obviously, because it's emissions per tonne, the higher your yields are, the lower your emissions per tonne are.
Okay.
And so because we have the highest cereal yields in the world, or amongst the highest cereal yields in the world, it means we have low emissions per ton.
Okay, so that oat figure came in, we'll just use oats as an example. If people want to see the other figures, they can read them in the paper or online. So 232 kgs of CO2 equivalents per ton of oats produced. And that's on dried grain. So on green grain, that's lower again at 207, isn't it?
Well, sorry, the 207 was the emissions as far as the farm gate, assuming that it's 15% moisture content. What we didn't include was the diesel effectively used for drying the crop.
Yeah.
If you a reasonable assumption for that would be 25 kilos of CO2 per ton
okay.
for the diesel used for drying. Now, in reality, in 2022,
it was a lot.
Few crops needed drying. They were put through the dryer room just to clean them.
Yeah.
So it's probably an overestimate.
Okay.
But even with that overestimate, we're still very low compared to other countries.
Okay. So how you've got these figures, John, this is a new model that Chagas have developed, basically. So we've heard of other tools out there that can, you know, I can put in data onto the computer and it'll give me a number back. But that's not Irish specific. So you've developed a model.
Yes, we've developed a model that uses the Irish specific emissions factors where we have them. There are one or two places where we don't have them.
Yeah.
And we have to use the international defaults.
Mm.
But when you do that, you can see those figures seem to stand out as being far too high. Just because we have a climate that means we have relatively low emissions, we have high yields, so we have low emissions per ton. And, you know, we obviously have good growers as well, you know, in order to achieve those high yields.
Absolutely. One of those things that we don't have is the emissions from residues, but they're all probably things that in a few years' time that we can have fairly easily from research, maybe. So we can calculate those. You're laughing at me, John.
I'm laughing at you, Sean, because you said fairly easy.
It's easy. A few trials.
None of these emissions factors are gained easily. But you're right, we can have them in a few years.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's been very useful for us to kind of identify from a tillage perspective where there are gaps in the knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's something that we within Chagas and others, you know, in the research community can focus in coming years to try and improve the information available.
Okay. So this is a start. It's 48 farms. You've developed a model, presumably the model maybe will have tweaks along the way, but what next now? So how do we get this model out to every farm in Ireland?
Well, and that's something we have to consider as a sector, I think, Siobhan, because obviously you need what's called activity data. So for example, we need to know what people's yields are, you know, what the yield of it, and it can be on a field by field basis, or if they manage the crop the same across the farm, it can be a crop by farm. But you need to know what the yield is, you need to know how much fertilizer is used, you need to know what cultivations we use, you know, to know how many passes there were through the field with the sprayer.
Yeah.
So there's quite, you know, what they did with straw. So there's quite a lot of data to collect. And unfortunately, at the minute, we don't kind of have a central place to collect that data.
Yeah.
You know, everyone records it, obviously.
Yeah.
But that could be in diaries or it could be in notebooks. And getting it from a notebook or a diary into a computer program to calculate the footprint is not easy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's something we need to consider as a sector as to how best to do that.
Yeah, and a lot of tillage farmers going around saying we need the carbon footprint of Irish grain, so from now on they need to start tracking all of that data and have it somewhere at least. Have it on Excel. Even if they do have it in the notebook, they'll have it for whenever this model is available. John, thanks a million for chatting to us.
No bother, Sean. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much to John for joining us. Now, at the Grain Awards, the winners, of course, of the awards were announced, which was the big part of the day. So the overall winner was the Deering family from County Laois. So John, Anne and Mark Deering from just outside Emo in County Laois. And they won the overall, the food grade oats award, and then they won the overall award as well. So I'm just going to go down to the winners here because I think it's very important that we acknowledge all the hard work that goes in. So winter feed barley, that's the Cassia contract. The winners were John and Ray Kavanagh from outside of Tyne, County Kildare. Malting barley, R&R Farms from O'Geely and Cork. Green feed barley, John Fennan, Goresbridge, Kilkenny. Premium spring barley, John Miller at Tyne, County Kildare. Dry feed barley, the Maddens from Dunsany in County Meath. Seed barley, Kathleen and James Marr, Johnstown, County Kilkenny. Green feed wheat, David O'Dwyer, Newbon in Wexford. Dry feed wheat, Michael Carey, Newcastle in County Wicklow. Seed wheat, Ballingale Farms, the Whelans down there in County Wexford. Food grade oats then, John Deering, Emo, County Laois. Green feed oats, Grange and Alvin Farm Partnership at Tyke County Kildare, Green Feed Beans, NBCB Farms, that's Maddox Town in Kilkenny, Green Isle Seed Rape was Paul O'Connell's farms in County Laois, and then there was a new sustainability award, so that went to the Sheridans in County Meath. Mark Sheridan picked that up on the day, and that sustainability award was new, and then the overall winner, John and Mark Deering in Emo County Laois. So next up, we spoke to John Keeley. John is head of grains at Tierlon, and John spoke to us about that new sustainability award, but of course about the life cycle assessment results and how Tierlon are going to use those results and what they hope will happen next. John Keeley, thanks for joining us. A super day here at the Grain Awards, a nice positive day, which is badly needed in the tillage industry at the minute.
Yeah, I suppose then the last positive day we had was probably 12 months ago at these same awards. So I think we were celebrating the Holy Trinity. We had Andy as the special guest, and that was a phrase he always used. So we had great prices, great yield,
yeah,
and great weather. And I'd say since that crop for Harvest 23 started to be sown, everything has been going against us, both from a price perspective, but I'd say the weather has been very uncooperative.
Yeah, so very important then to reward farmers and acknowledge, you know, grain quality, especially in 2023, was an extremely difficult thing to achieve, and the farmers that came up here today for their awards, the quality was, you know, an excellent standard still in those difficult conditions.
Ah yeah, and to be fair, I thought we refer to them as the cream of the crop, but the growers, and we had 14 different individual categories of grain recognised today, which I think is a testament to the organisation and our growers in itself. So we have a very broad portfolio of different types of grain, and a lot of those grains attract a premium over and above the feed price, which is so important for us. But in a year where economics are challenged, that €3 million we paid over feed is absolutely critical, and it's probably, you know, something that the organisation needs to look at growing over time, and that would be our strategy in the grain procurement division, to look at growing the percentage of grain we're able to add a premium to and the volume we're able to add a premium to.
And something that you announced today to help grow that premium grains market and helps to sustain it as well into the future was the carbon footprints. So we spoke to John Spink. So you announced the life cycle assessment for Irish grain. So Tierlon invested in this study along with Chagas, and you've 48 growers, 11,500 hectares, a massive project, John, a massive undertaking, and you now have average figures from those 48 farms for Irish grains, oilseed rape, beans. Why did you decide to do it?
No, and I suppose the catalyst for kicking us off on that journey, and it has been a journey, and it's something that when you're ploughing new ground, it can be tougher maybe than ploughing something that's tilled every year.
Yeah.
But it's been a long and arduous journey, and I'd say it's probably more time spent on it than actual expense.
Okay.
Because basically the project itself kicked off on the basis of our oat portfolio, and we have customers who would be challenging our claims around sustainability. So in other words, we decided we need to put our money where our mouth was, and anything that we say on a product today, and the whole legislation around this space is tightening up all the time. So what we want to be able to do is, when we're talking about producing the best oats in the world, is to be actually to be able to prove that. So from a quality perspective, from a provenance perspective, but also from an environmental impact perspective.
Yeah.
And the study started off with us looking to set out on that journey to validate our oats claims, where we've landed. And it was something that it was probably by degrees. So rather than us doing a survey on 30 growers to establish an LCA number for our oat-only category, it was actually a small amount of additional time and a small number of additional farms that allowed us to do that for all our wheat, barley, oats, rye, beans, etc. So all the significant grains that we take in on an annual basis, we now have an LCA number that we can go to anybody with.
And that LCA number, John, it's so we didn't have that number before, you know, and the figures that we have in the global database, the GFLI, your figures from Tierlon are much lower than that GFLI. So it just shows you the importance of having our own research and our own data.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we were very lucky today. We had Minister Hayden here, and we had the Director of Chagas here, basically all hearing firsthand of the importance of that work and the potential for that work to deliver meaningful change and meaningful difference for Irish growers. The fact that we've always been talking about the sustainability of the grain that we were producing, driven in the main by we have absolutely fabulous yields here in Ireland.
Yeah.
We have a high level of moisture to grow any crop. Now that can be a challenge when we get too much of it, but it's something that, you know, the right crop grown by the with the right grower going into the right market, I think is something Ireland can be very, very proud of. But I'd say we need to be able to prove everything we're saying to these global ingredient customers, or global feed customers for that matter, and we need to be able to back up more of what we say.
Everyone in tillage has been saying we need these figures, we need carbon footprints for our Irish grain, we don't have them. Tierlan have come now and have figures. They're not definitive figures, these are year figures, they're not figures for Ireland. So you've kick-started this journey. What do you want to see happen next now, John?
Well, this is something I think we're going to be asked for again in the future to certainly update. Now, I think a lot of the heavy lifting has been done by both Tierlan and Chagas. There wasn't even an Irish model for calculating the information when we set out on this journey. Today, and in fairness to Donal O'Brien and John Spink in particular, the lads have done Trojan work in the background in terms of actually developing an Irish specific model. Now it's up to us to feed more and newer information into that on an ongoing basis, but that doesn't come at a cost. So if there's anything that the department can do in terms of trying to support this, certainly Tierlan as a farmer-led co-op would welcome a support like that with open arms.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where it needs to go. It needs funding now to push it on further. And look, we're talking about sustainability here and carbon footprints. You had a sustainability award today for the first time.
Yes.
Absolutely. So the Sheridans from County Meath took home that award.
Yeah, and worthy winners. So the idea of a sustainable grain award came up last year. Until it actually came to the time to decide who was going to win it. So, and Donal Maloney, who manages all our grain intake, Donal is able to present what is a small and tight committee with a set of criteria based on the different growers. Normally, Donal will present maybe five or six growers for each different category, and you can compare them and contrast them on the quality of grain and the volume of grain that they delivered into us. We didn't have that from a sustainability only perspective. So what we did was we took the 48 growers who kindly participated in our study, and to be fair to the Sheridans, when we looked at it, three of their different types of grain, so I think it was winter oats, winter wheat, and spring barley, achieved in the top five for each of those categories, which across 48 growers was phenomenal results, and I'd say that they weren't far outside of the top five for the other three grains that they produced as well. So
Excellent. While
we won't be publishing individual growers' data, we will be sending them a report on their own analysis. But it is something that I think the Sheridans can be really proud of, and I'd say they're strongly supported by their agronomist up in that region, Conor Hoy, who's relatively new to Tierlan up there. But listen, we're looking forward to maybe another winner next year.
Very good. Good to hear. John, thanks for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks, Siobhan.
Okay, next up is the Food Vision Tillage Group. So they met on Wednesday morning of this week to go through what is meant to be the final draft report from that group. So the report that's to be presented to the minister. So we have this in the news pages this week as well. Of course, we have the main, there's 23 recommendations in the report. We have the main recommendations outlined there. The first one, and the one that we hope will be implemented fairly quickly, is the suggestion that we have a tillage expansion and sustainability scheme. So this would pay farmers to go into tillage, but also to stay in tillage and maintain the farmers that are in it. There's also suggestions in it to increase the straw incorporation measures budget, expand the protein aid scheme, and increase the number of items available under the tillage capital investment scheme. A suggestion in there too to ring fence land from solar to make sure that high grade tillage land doesn't enter into solar farming. And then other things in there, like that we need an investigation into the viability of milling wheat and an oilseed rape plant. A lot of space dedicated to crop insurance in it as well, which I'm not sure about. And what else is in it as I go through it? I'll just take a look to see if I missed any of the main points. That life cycle assessment comes into as well, and making sure that there's more research goes into that. A lot in it about pesticides and that kind of thing that we're doing anyway, like, you know, ways to improve integrated pest management, and, you know, organics, sludges, And a very important one is to promote tillage as a career for students and people entering the industry, the agricultural industry. So look, a lot in that report. We'll hear more as the weeks go on, and when that report will finally be published. Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Martin Hayden, attended the Tierlong Grain Awards yesterday. And I spoke to the minister and asked him where we were on that tree crop rural derogation and also around funding. Minister, thanks very much for joining us. A great day here at Tierlong Grain Awards.
Yeah, look, really important that we recognise excellence across all the sectors, and yeah, it's very good of Tierlong to sponsor this and promote, you know, some of the best tillage farmers in the country and their achievements.
Yeah, absolutely. And a few of your neighbours in the list there as well. Good to see a few Kildare people. A leash person won, of course, which, look, I won't go on about that. But
yeah, good support in there from the Midlands. Kildare very well represented, as we'd expect, as well as Leash. And a friend of mine that was in Ag College from Wexford 25 years ago, we were in Ag College together in Kildalton, was an award winner there as well.
Very good. Good to see. Look, there was great news in the middle of those awards, carbon figures. And, you know, Tierlong has led the way on this now. They collected that data from farmers, trying to put them out there. So they've developed a model now, but obviously more funding needs to come on this. So what's going to happen next there? Is there something going to happen from government on those carbon figures, or where will the funding come from?
Well, just to recognise what Tierlong are doing, partnering with Chagas is really important.
Yeah.
It's, you know what, it's putting verifiable proof points behind what we've already known, that we are a very low carbon emitter in our Irish tillage sector. But as I travel boardrooms all around the world trying to open new markets with Borbia and others, you know, more and more your sustainability credentials are being questioned across every sector. Mm. And being able to back that up is hugely, hugely important. So sometimes it's about maintaining access to really high markets you have that you're trying to grow in. Mm. Other times it's about growing that market access. But obviously government has had a number of measures where we've supported farmers and industry in the past.
Yeah.
In my Department of Agriculture, we have a fund of €22 million we're spending on research and innovation, where we're supporting development of, you know, finding solutions and more data around all of the key challenges that farmers and the industry is facing.
Yeah, so this is in the draft report now that's nearly ready to go to the minister. They've suggested that these figures be done as well. So do you think some of that €22 million will go towards this research?
So we've expressions of interest in the call at the minute, and then the call will go out to the thematic call in terms of the research projects will go out then later this year. And look, there's a possibility on that, but there's loads of different elements. We support farmers, we support industry across a range of different measures. I want to recognise last year was really hard year, and from the farmers' perspective we had a number of investments there, one-off payments to try and support them through what was the worst year possible, with everything going wrong from weather to yields to price. And you know, you mentioned the Food Vision group report. That is a really good base for us. We've had our short-term emergency interventions as a government. We have medium-term ones as well, like Strong Corporation, like Protein Crop Aid. And when they were oversubscribed, as they were, we weren't found wanting in adding more money to them. But in the medium to longer term, then, we also have the proposal coming down the line around, you know, from the Food Vision Group around the tillage incentive scheme. And
yeah,
I, for one, do see that is an area, you know, it has done a job for us in terms of trying to get more land ploughed 2 years ago, a maintenance payment there. Obviously, we know we lost land last year because it was a very tough year. We lost land going into this year with not enough winter cereals being sown. But if we want to meet our ambitious targets, we've got to have a support in there for tillage farmers who are actively remaining in tillage, and for the next generation to see that future there. And I think, you know, an adaption around the tillage incentive payment to support tillage farmers, active tillage farmers, is really important into the future.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'd all agree there. And, you know, today has been a great day, but it's a very difficult time in tillage. As you said, if that payment comes, it will be a really good thing for farmers. We do need a bit of a maintenance payment at the minute, but there's tillage farmers are really struggling. You mentioned the derogation in your speech there in at the awards. So the department have applied now for a derogation from the tree crop rule or the crop diversification requirements. The likelihood of us getting that, and if we don't get it, will the department, you know, enforce their own flexibility around that?
So first of all, around GAIC 7 or the tree crop rule, what's really important is that we're pushing really hard, and not only about getting the derogation, but getting the derogation in time, that we would be able to notify farmers of that, and time is very much against us on that one. So we will work, we're working might and main to try and get a positive result on that. There has to be flexibility in rules here to take account of the very difficult circumstances we're in. You know, even though Chagas has had more positive kind of projections for 2024. You know, the amount of land winter crops didn't get into before Christmas, the seed challenges we face. There are a lot of challenges there that all make a very strong case for us getting that derogation. We continue to push for it and to try and get word back on it as soon as possible to farmers.
Yeah, unfortunately, some farmers now have, you know, they've ploughed on, they've put in winter wheat. There's, I heard of a farmer, 200 acres of winter wheat didn't establish. So that derogation news was probably needed last autumn. So, you know, we need things to happen quickly, I suppose.
It still will be a benefit to get it now. It will be better than not getting it. I agree with you. And we'd like to get these things straight away. But, you know, the public money is at stake here, and we can't forge ahead without when is European scheme or European state aid rules come into play. So that's where we have to go through those processes, and we're applying as much pressure through myself, Mr. McConnell, all our officials, we're applying as much pressure as we can to get a result back on that as quick as possible.
Fair enough. And I'll wrap up now soon, Minister. But if that tillage incentive scheme does come in a renewed form, you know, how long do we have to wait for that? Do we have to wait for the next budget, like, or when can that money come?
So, like, I think the principle of it is really important. We have to get the finalised report published from the Food Vision Group with all the different elements they have in there. And as I say, there's the short, there's the medium, and there's a longer term piece. And we haven't been found wanting as a government in the short term pieces in terms of stopgap measures. But I think what farmers want to see as well, and I hear this back at every meeting I'm at with farmers, is, you know, about the next generation, is about certainty for the next 3, 4, 5 years that I'm going to keep at this. And that's where those medium term payments come in. So it'd be great if it came in before the budget, but if there was a nod to it coming in the budget, and we were sure it was going to be there as a long-term measure, then that's something that would be give a lot of certainty to a sector as well. But where we need short-term measures, we haven't been found wanting in the past, and we won't be again.
Do you still think the 400,000 hectare target is achievable?
I think it's really ambitious and it's challenging, and we know that, and we knew it when it was set. It's probably every bit as challenging now, but we're going to continue to work, because as you saw from the presentation today, there is a space here where we can add value, where we can look to access more premium markets and have more of Irish tillage farmers' grain going into food and not livestock feed, and get that higher value return for it, and add value on the processing side as well, which is all about jobs and economic activity for rural Ireland.
Thanks very much to the Minister for joining us and taking the time to talk to us on the podcast. I suppose, look, we hope that funding will come. I saw a few weeks ago the AgNav just got 2 million there to improve things. And certainly if this life cycle assessment model is going to be rolled out across the sector, it needs a massive amount of funding, and it can't come from, you know, anyone applying to a research call. It has to be put in across the, you know, the entire country. It can't be, you know, one university or something applying for research into it. The time now is for action to get this put across nationally. Okay, look, plenty of other tillage news in the paper. Pat O'Toole attended the Malt and Barley Conference on Tuesday. Rachel O'Donovan was talking to farmers at a crop walk last week, and those farmer views are in there as well. But next up on the podcast, we'll move on to a new product and Syngenta. I was at a briefing from Syngenta last week, and they have a new biofertilizer, Vixarin, and Vixarin is meant to help improve nitrogen efficiency. So here's Syngenta's Andy Cunningham to tell us more. Andy Cunningham, we're here at the Syngenta briefing, and you just gave us an update on a new product, an exciting product, Vixarin. So you might tell us a little bit about it. What is it?
So Vixarin is a endophyte, well, it's a free-living bacteria, actually. And it's important to recognise that it's a free-living bacteria, because not only does it colonise the foliage of a plant, but it's able to have activity within the soil.
Okay, so it works in both places.
Absolutely, yeah, which helps the fact that it helps the soils, the rhizosphere, as we call it. But it also means that you can get the bacteria to the root system as well. So you get a more rounded colonization of the whole plant.
Yeah. And it's a biofertilizer. It's not a biostimulant.
It's a bit of a grey area, if I'm honest. Yeah. So it is a biostimulant, but I feel like that doesn't do the product justice by what it actually is. It's a biological which delivers nitrogen from the atmosphere to the plant. So it's not actually a nitrogen product itself. It's a bit like the rhizobium bacteria that you'd find on pulses that develop within the nodules of the root system there. It's very similar in the fact that it takes nitrogen from the atmosphere, fixes it, and creates ammonium that is delivered to the crop.
Okay, that's a good way of describing it. So if it does that, then you have an opportunity to reduce the amount of nitrogen you use, or maybe not reduce the amount of nitrogen you use, but increase the amount of nitrogen available to the plant.
Absolutely. In a season like we've got now, there's a lot of backward crops, late drill crops, which maybe their root system has not been developed as much as they would have done. Okay. You know, that crop's ability to scavenge nutrients in the soil, which probably has been washed through anyway with the amount of rainfall that we've had. So, yeah, there is two scenarios that we say that this product works well in. One is we call it the compensatory benefit, where we can reduce fertilizers and then compensate for that reduction. And we would say we're confident we can replace 30 kilograms of nitrogen, but trials have actually shown we can replace more. But in reality, in a year like we've got now, I would suggest this complementary benefit that we say. Okay. So you keep your nitrogen fertilizer regime the same, but then add it as a supplementary product on top, and you allow the crop to utilize its nitrogen more effectively through the season.
So you're going to help the crop along. If you are reducing your amount of nitrogen, your trials were based on a 30 kg decrease.
Yeah, so we've done a large number of trials, not only in Ireland, but we've done in the UK, but also in other representable countries in Europe. And this is why we're confident we can replace 30. Our data would actually show, especially from 2022, where we can replace upwards of 45 kilograms of nitrogen, which is why we're confident 30 is something we can replace.
Okay. Application time, and then, is very important, and the conditions that you apply it in.
It is, and it also depends on what crop you're applying it to. Mm.
So if we're in a cereal crop.
Yeah, so cereals, we know that cereals will utilise most of its fertilizer or nitrogen inputs between growth stage 21 and 39. Yeah. So getting the product in at the early stages in the spring is going to allow the crop to be benefiting from Vixarin. But we do need the crop to be actively growing at the time, because we need the plant to be favourable for the bacteria to colonise it. Allowing the stomata to be open is the best time. So where we see this positioned is probably WT zero fungicide. Okay. Because it means the growers are going in anyway, it's not a special pass. We have got really good compatibility with other CP products. So if people were to look on the website, there is a compatible list, but also products that it's not compatible with. So we've got a positive and negative list, which will help when growers are deciding which products they're putting in with the T0 and whether Vixarin can go in with it.
Okay, that's good. That's practical. Temperatures and everything else. You talked about humidity and...
Yeah, so we did talk about that. You're right. So it's got a really great function, this bacteria, and the fact that it makes it more resilient, where it can, in conditions it doesn't like, it's able to create a cyst. So it shelters itself, creates a shield. But it's not fixing nitrogen, really, in that scenario. And when it's in temperatures below 4 degrees... and less than 60% humidity, for example, it will go in that cyst. We need conditions to be above 4 degrees, ideally getting up to 10 to 12 degrees will be ideal for the bacteria to be multiplying and getting the most out of it.
A question that came from the crowd, and I think a lot of people listen will think of this as well. Does it matter what type of nitrogen you're using? You know, liquid, can, urea, protected urea?
Yeah, so a lot of the trials work that we've done has been with liquid fertilizer, which does mean that it is very available for the crop already. If growers are utilizing prilled nitrogen, whether it's protected or not, you know, we don't know what season we're going to get. That then prills could be applied and then could sit on top of that surface depending on how much moisture there is around. So it does give a level of insurance that that gap between application and actually being delivered to the crop is filled by having Vixarin around. So I only see having Vixarin has been a benefit whether your prills are protected or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. We look forward to the trials, Andy, and people can ask their agronomist for more advice on it. People would be wondering why the sound went quiet because everyone went out for their dinner. So we better let you go get your dinner now.
I much appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much to Andy. So we'll move on to grain markets now. And look, not good. The heading I have in the paper this week is that it's a buyer's market, and it certainly is. Grain markets continued their downward trend last week, and you know, people are just going to hold out to see can they get a lower price. In better news, prices did start to hold a bit at the start of this week. Just looking at Matif, like over the last, since kind of the 24th, or the 19th of January, sorry, the price on Matif wheat for November has actually fallen by €19.50 per tonne. So that's a massive drop. And then over the last week, Matif actually dropped €11.75 per tonne. So that was Friday to Friday. And if I just look at my app now, so it was at €209.25 last Friday. And then earlier on Wednesday afternoon, it was at 208.75. And it's actually gone to 208 now at this time on Wednesday afternoon. So that's the December Matif wheat price. So unfortunately, it's dropped a little bit further, but certainly not as much as it had been dropping last week. So that's a good thing. Just an idea of prices at home. Reports of prices for spot barley under 205, spot wheat then somewhere between 210 and 215. And if you go to November, then those prices are probably similar, but staying on the high side. So you'd have 205 for barley and 215 for wheat maybe. But look, harvest is a long time away. A lot could change. A lot of weather could change in between times. But certainly at the minute, planting progressing really well on that second maize crop and that massive maize crop from Brazil. And that's not helping markets because the maize price has dropped. And we know when the maize price drops, Irish barley and wheat will struggle to compete against it. A positive story is oilseed rape. So oilseed rape increased last week by €4.25 per tonne. Now it did drop today a little bit. And if I just look at my app, now that November price, so it finished at 429 on Friday, and it actually had dropped to 426.25 earlier on, and it's back up to 427 at the minute. So that's a good thing. Certainly staying relatively steady compared to some of the other prices. Just a reminder as well, we are still running our tillage podcast survey. So if you can take the time to do it, we'd really appreciate it. The link is in the article that the story is on the website, and it's also in the description on Spotify. There's a €100 one for all voucher up for grabs if you carry out the survey as well. So look, we'd love to have your feedback, your comments, and see how we can improve things on the podcast. Okay, we'll move to weather next, and I have the report in from Met Éireann. So if we go to the forecast for Friday, fairly cool day with sunny spells and showers. Some of the showers heavy with hail and a chance of thunder. Not what we wanted to hear. Temperatures of 5 to 8 degrees and then maybe down to -1 overnight with ice possible. Saturday, a lot of dry weather overall. Sunshine, cloud, temperatures 7 to 10 degrees and then lowest temperatures of 1 to 3 degrees that night. Sunday, current indications suggest any rain and drizzle will clear in the southern counties in the morning with scattered showers affecting western, northern and eastern coastal counties. Top temperatures 6 to 8 degrees and temperatures going to 0 to 3 degrees at night time. And then if I'm just look at my rainfall, so yeah, heavy enough rain in parts, certainly in the west on Friday. Saturday doesn't look too bad. Sunday isn't too bad apart from in the southwest. Monday is okay. So there's a bit of drying. Tuesday looks like a wetter day in the south and west. And Wednesday isn't too bad again. So look, weather looks to be improving a little bit. I know there's still rain there, but you might get out to do some jobs. Maybe a bit of nitrogen on oilseed rape crops that need it, or winter cereals. And maybe a bit of spraying as well if you get the chance to do it. Certainly, try and get out to do some plant counts on those winter cereals to see what changes you need to make. Get your green area indexes done on your oilseed rape and get your seed and fertilizer in so you don't have to be doing that when the weather does change. Look, that's it for this week. Thanks to our guests, to John Spink, John Keeley, Minister Martin Hayden and Andy Cunningham from Syngenta. Well done, of course, to all the award winners. Thanks to Claire and Jerome back at base for editing. Until next week, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.